if you like someone and you like what they're doing, you should say that. I think that too many of us go through life wondering if people approve of what we're doing or what we're doing or value what we're doing. And there's a lot of value in just saying that to a person. You never know what kind of impact you are going to make on them.
From the crossroads of America in the Hoosier state of Indiana, this is Get In, the podcast focused on the unfolding stories and extraordinary innovations happening right now in the heartland. I'm Matt Hunkler, CEO of Powder Keg, and I will be one of your hosts for today's conversation. I'm joined in studio by co-host Nate Spangle over here in the Sun King hat.
What's up?
And on the show today, I am joined by Toph Day and Mohammed Yassin, CEO and VP of Marketing, respectively, at Elevate Ventures, the number one early stage venture capital firm in the Great Lakes region and top 20 in the world.
Come on, hey, let's go. Woo.
Thank you guys for being
here. Last year was 1.1 every 2.33 days.
I don't know what you just said, but we'll talk about that later. I'm excited. So we've already got some teasers in here. Today is a very special conversation because we are just a few days away from the biggest cross-sector innovation conference in the world. That's Rally. I see you both sporting your gear. Mohammed's, all three of you. Look at that. That's amazing. Yeah. I wear mine so much, mine was in the dirty laundry. So I figured I'd spare you guys. I'll spare you guys from that this morning. Just a few days away. Rally, of course, is in Indianapolis. This is year two. Last year was a huge year for Rally. And this year it's coming back August 27th to 28th, two full days of programming, all kinds of parties, speakers from around the world, startups from everywhere, the best startups. You guys see thousands of startups every year.
It's insane. And you say insane in the membrane.
I'm so excited. And we've already interviewed some of the ones that won last year here on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing to see what they're doing now. You heard it here first.
You heard it here. I interviewed, I think, eight or nine of the CEOs that pitched last year, and I think three ended up winning. And I picked them blind from before. That's awesome. That's a cool company.
That's some good taste. I love that.
I'm just saying. I think I know a thing or two. So let's see who I get on camera this year.
And we got two of the main guys behind the conference here today, so we can give you all the details behind that. But this episode's also going to be a bit of a season finale as well. So this is going to be a bit of an end of an era for the show. We have some really big things in store for the show, and Nate and I are going to share a little bit more about that at the end of this episode. But thought it would be fun to like almost do a little bit of a best of for the show in a celebration, of course.
Awesome.
The Indies, the Dundies.
I like it.
There we go.
The Dundies. I thought it'd be fun to start a little bit just with how you both got into tech in Indiana, because you both have such interesting stories. And Toph, you've had some airtime on the show before, so I figured we'd start with Mohammed today just to learn a little bit more about his journey getting into Indiana and Indiana Tech specifically.
Yeah, it makes me feel really special.
Yeah, man. You are.
So I moved to Indiana about 15 years ago. Background before tech was Big Co.
Yeah.
Tech-enabled, e-commerce, Victoria's Secret, insurance companies, et cetera. And I moved to Indiana with no friends, no family, and got into tech primarily because I'm just a giant nerd, but also because the tech community was the community that really put their arms around me and welcomed me to Indiana, right? This was through the early Powder Keg events and many other events that were happening during that particular time. This is the heyday of Indianapolis at the peak of Exact Target being about to be acquired, et cetera. And there was a lot happening, right? So going into those rooms and meeting people is actually how I built not only my network, but even my friends that I consider family was all through those events here in Indiana.
Going into a new room and into a new community, that can be a little intimidating. I know I've felt that way anytime I go out of town for a conference and it's a new environment. Tell me a little bit about what were you feeling at the time and what helped you get over that maybe initial hesitation to plug in?
Yeah, I was terrified, right? This is meetup or event and just typing in meetups and things like that and finding things that look interesting and just showing up. What made me feel comfortable, though, was the people in the rooms who were so kind, right? So welcoming and really gave me a lot of early opportunities to get exposure, right? My first guest blog post happened just because someone happened to meet me in an event. It was like, hey, you want to write about what we were just talking about? I'm like, sure. And then those first things snowballed and went into speaking events and then went into eventually building a personal brand that took me into the early stages of a startup. and being able to lead that from a marketing perspective through its first 10 years.
And you had an incredible run helping Perk grow and scale. And then, of course, at High Alpha, helping so many companies get started and do their marketing. And now mentoring so many other people who are breaking into tech, going into tech for the first time.
Yeah.
What is some of the advice that you give people most often when you're saying, like, here, this is what you need to do. If you want to succeed in tech, start here. 1, 2, 3, ABCs. Give us a little bit of a
I think the biggest thing is community, right?
Yeah.
So many people try to do the job on their own by themselves in their basement, in their home office, and figure everything out. Okay. When they have a whole community around them, and the best ideas actually come when you are sitting with others and when you're conversing with others and you're able to bounce things back and forth, that exists, right? And I think ignoring that is one of the biggest mistakes I see a lot of people have. The second thing I tell people is to look at professionals that are outside of their particular discipline in their industry, right? So if you're in hard tech, I don't know, look to software. If you're in software B2B, especially, I always tell them, look at the people that are in retail, in B2C retail. How are they doing their marketing? Mm-hmm. How are they engaging and retaining their clients? Because they're the ones doing it really the best, right?
Yeah.
Look around to see who's doing the function the best, regardless of what industry or that they may be in.
I love that. It's like a little teaser to cross-sector innovation, cross-sector stuff there.
I love that. Toph, what about you? What are your earliest memories of breaking into tech? You have a long and storied career, so many successful companies that you've started and grown and scaled, invested in.
Yeah, you know what? I just realized listening to Muhammad, that's why I was looking off into space, because I think I had just a realization I really thought about. I didn't really know that there was a tech community here when I started my first tech company.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it was because I really started that first tech company. It was a broadband company. It was a means to an end to really go start a commercial development company. And so we started that broadband company, and I was just very hyper-focused on just go get contracts, which we did. And then the dot-bomb hit. We ended up selling that company.
The big crash of 2000.
Yeah. And so we focused on actually getting contracts. Everybody else was focused on eyeballs. We were focused on subscribers. And that's what ended up saving our rear end, is we had real customers, real contracts that we could sell. And so I don't think, and I can't remember when TechPoint first was started, and it was something else, I think, originally.
Anita.
What was it called?
I think it was called
Anita.
John Qualls. And
so it was probably started Scott, back in
that,
the...
That was the name of an org?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
Anita?
So.
Yeah.
It was called something different.
All right.
And I think that was in the mid
remember.
To
it's,
late...
It's an acronym for something, but I can't remember.
And I think it was the mid to late 90s, right? I think it was mid to late 90s time frame.
Yeah.
So that's about the time I started. It was in 97, starting our first company, first tech company. And
97?
I did two.
Is that the year you were born?
Yes. Nice.
That's awesome.
That's a good year.
Nice.
That's a good year.
But I think I did four companies before I knew, in 10 years, before I knew TechPoint really existed.
Yeah.
And then before I got ingrained into that community. So I was over here doing tech stuff on an island, feeling like I felt alone. I felt by myself trying to figure stuff out and wasn't even really aware of the community that was burgeoning at the same time.
Yeah. Why was TechPoint so important to you in those early days once you found it?
Because I felt connected.
Yeah.
I felt like I had found my people.
Yeah.
Right? The community around, the tech community, which is all kinds of folks, right? Not just the entrepreneurs, but the investors or the people who were providing services or whatever it was.
What are some of the benefits of being in a community of like-minded people working in the same industry?
It's a lot easier to get stuff done. It's a lot easier to build relationships.
See, that's interesting. I feel like I want to double-click into this a little bit. When you talk about like getting stuff done at an early stage startup, everyone's like, I need to be heads down. I just need to go in like monk mode, lock myself in a room and get stuff done. Why is, especially early stage, why is maybe that a wrong lens to think through? And why is the community lens so important to think about with startups?
Because all those people in that community have made thousands of mistakes. And so in a few conversations, they can say, oh yeah, I'm trying to find a solution to do X. Oh yeah, I've used blah, 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 blah. And probably you want to go with boom or boom. And it just takes a lot of noise out of the process, especially nowadays in the last several years, as fast as technology is moving. We do this all the time, even today. I'm always asking people like, hey, we want to do X, and what do you know? And it's so amazing. You can do literally hours or weeks and months of research in about 10 minutes with a couple phone calls.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful. That's very powerful. Do either of you have a favorite memory from the early days of Powder Keg when you first got involved? Toph, you were involved from the very earliest days that I can remember. Back when we were in like the back rooms of bars and like borrowed space.
So one of my favorite memories of the early days of, what was it before Powder Keg?
Verge. Hackers and Founders.
Hackers and Founders. So I didn't know the really smart people. I didn't know the engineering community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I loved about it initially. I walked in a room and there's all these engineers standing around. I'm like, this is pretty cool.
Matt, how did you get into the engineer space? Like, I was like, how did you show up and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to get the smartest engineers from around the city to come and show up at this bar?
So it's actually, the story of Powder Keg, the origin story is very self-serving. So it started as I was struggling with an e-commerce business. I had sold the business that I started in college to join the Orr Fellowship program. Started an e-commerce business, was struggling with it. Got a bunch of people together in a room to be like, hey, what am I doing wrong here? Because I don't know why this is so much harder than building software, but it was for me. And I got great advice. And just because we brought those people together, there were a couple other guys that were like, hey, can I present what I'm doing and get some feedback on what I'm doing? One of those guys, and I said, yes, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And after that meeting, everyone was like, when's the next one of these? This was awesome. And I was like, next one, what are you talking about? I don't have time for this. And one of the other guys that kind of helped make it happen, he's like, I really need to find a co-founder to help me build this software. One of the other guys that had presented in that room, again, self-serving, he's like, I need an engineer. So I want to host another one of these events. I'll help make the next one happen. And I'm just going to call it Hackers and Founders. It borrowed a name from a Silicon Valley-based organization, nonprofit out there, because I'm a founder and I need a hacker.
Yep.
And that's literally how it got more engineering focused. And since then, we made sure every pitch that we gave was not just a business pitch, but at least 20% of the pitch had to be about the technology and like what made it different, what made it interesting, so that it was welcoming of all different personalities, perspectives, roles in an organization. And you can definitely see some people's eyes just like glaze over during the minute or two of the pitch when people are going deep on the tech side of things, but that's how you learn. You got to be in a room where you don't understand what's going on.
We talk about today, one of the first things we talk about in this concept called MELFO, and the M stands for market, and it's you have to be able to sell it and make it.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
What are the other words in that acronym?
It sounded like something from Harry Potter.
Break down
MELFO. Market, entrepreneur, legal, financial, operational. We can go to that later, but we've assigned these specific things. Like if entrepreneurship's all complex, there's so much noise. Boil it down to what really matters and how to get funding, and not only how to get funding, but how to execute the business.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Narrow, deep, simpler, better, more traction. So market, entrepreneur, legal, financial, operational, and then what that means in each one. It gets more complex as you go along that journey of pre-seed, seed, series A, series B, but that's just our effort to
simplify. And that's like the funding scale. As companies grow and scale and need to raise capital.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's...
I want to pull together two things that both of you said. So one, for me, for Powder Keg in the early days, you mentioned there's lots of different disciplines that were in those rooms, which is amazing. And for me, it was valuable because, much like Toph was saying earlier, when you have network, you can call and do quick research. Hey, what should I be doing here or there? But it was even more important, all the people I met in those rooms when I was trying to scale, right? When I needed more writers, when I needed maybe someone to do some website development, et cetera, because the people in that room, I was able to make really quick phone calls and be like, hey, I know you're writing at your kitchen table, taking on freelance stuff. Would you mind doing like 20 blogs for me?
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And that's another thing, not only for Powder Keg, but just for like events in general. One of the reasons you do that is so you can build that bench of people that you can reach out to when you need like expert work done. And you can get it done at an expert level without having to keep expert staff.
I think that's what's so interesting is you're like, in a little bit of a way, showing the arc of evolution of community here in Indiana tech, because at the time, there wasn't anything else like that. That was the only place you could get it. There was no rally conference that you could go to for 2 days and like just immerse yourself in all those connections, all those relationships. And now it's to the point where there's so many great things like that in Indiana and across the country that we've really focused on. How do we serve the entrepreneurs and the executive leaders specifically? And we've brought the community to a more private way so that you can have more intimate kind of experiences, largely inspired by you, Toph. You've talked to me for decades. You've been a mentor to me now at this point, almost decades.
Maybe
a decade and a half.
Oh, God.
Maybe a decade and a half. But you always said how important it was.
It was in 1997, baby. Come on.
You always told me how important it was that you had this sort of almost like personal board of advisors of mm-hmm. other entrepreneurs that you were in the trenches with, meeting with on a regular basis.
Yep.
Can you talk to me about the importance of having a peer group of like-minded individuals?
Yes. I think it's just probably human nature. You go to a party and ask an entrepreneur how their business is, right? And it's, oh my God, it's amazing. I can barely hang on. And literally that night they go home and they're in a fetal position worried about payroll. But it's just human. You've got to, they'll fake it till you make it,
yeah.
et cetera. And I don't really think about faking it to make it. Like everybody, HP, when it started in the garage, like everybody's just trying to figure stuff out. So I think the importance of it's like a safe place. It's people, and not maybe a safe place, but it's people who have actually experienced what you're experiencing. It's like until you walk in another person's shoes, you never really know what it's like, right? And the difference between empathy and sympathy, right? Empathy is, I think I can relate, I can understand, but sympathy is I've lived it, right,
yep.
as well. So I think that's the key difference is people who have walked in the shoes and have experienced what you're feeling. And when you say one thing that is happening to you that's not good, they will automatically connect literally 1,000 dots that you don't have to explain all the backstory and the intricacies of whatever issue because they've dealt with it before too.
Yeah.
And then the final key, I think, is a group that shares experiences and not advice.
Yeah,
huge. And because advice, I can get offended by your advice. But if you share your experiences, it might not tell me the exact answer. But if I have 10 people tell me experiences, and some might pass and say, I don't think I have experience, it gets close to that. But when other people share experiences, I am automatically putting puzzle pieces together in my head of, oh, this is how I could more efficiently or better solve this issue.
Can you think of one time where you had a big problem that you were facing and your group helped you think through it?
Early on, I mean, one company we were facing bankruptcy, right? We'd made the decision we made that almost put us into bankruptcy was also the decision that was the catalyst for us selling. But dialing back, how do you think going through your first riff is terrifying?
Yeah.
Right? And how do you think through that? And it's just, it's not fun.
I think that's like a great point of they share their experiences versus sharing advice. Like I go to a mentor and it's, I want a little bit of advice. Hey, you've been mm-hmm. in this seat before. What would you do? But then when you go to this almost the peer group or like the therapy group, right, for CEOs, and it's, they're not telling you what to do because it's different for your business, but they're saying like, hey, these are the experience that I have and this is what we did. And you can take a little bit of that and take a little bit of that and create your own tofu soup.
I mean, it's a little bit different with a mentor though, right? Like with a mentor, you expect that they are pretty deep in your business mm-hmm. and in your background and what you've been through versus when you go into a peer group, it's like a general. They like Tove mentioned, they may connect a couple of dots. They don't know the whole backstory.
Yeah.
So really they don't have a place to even be giving you advice, right? Whereas a mentor really can.
Yeah.
A mentor is in the trenches with you.
And you've had some awesome mentors, Mohammed. Can you tell me a little bit about how you went about building that kind of tribe of mentors?
Yeah, it's been really, I think every stage of my career has been someone different,
mm-hmm.
right? And one of the big things is really understanding where am I struggling to see around the corners? Because you can see directly in front of you, but what's that next right or left turn?
Yeah.
And understanding who is the right person at this time for me to be talking to in order to move my career ahead or move my relationships ahead inside of this organization. And for me, that has been everyone from the CTO when I was at CareSource, who was a great mentor for me and helped me really navigate a lot of that organization, to different CMOs, all at different stages. Because also the other thing is you want a mentor who is ahead of you, but not so far ahead of you that they forgot where they came from. You need them one or two levels in front of you. And then once you catch up, you need to move on to the next mentor, right? That mentor turns into a friend. It turns into a support network, but isn't necessarily the person that is helping you really see around those corners.
That is a huge insight. You have something to add?
I was gonna say, it seems from peer group to mentor, like finding a peer group seems hard to me. Like finding people that you can be vulnerable with seems hard. How do you find a good peer group for entrepreneurs?
I think it's spot on, Nate. For me, it was maybe a little different because I had the benefit of being in this group called EO. And so the people in my group still today were all in EO. And so they understood the meaning of confidentiality. We're not all signing NDAs here, but we're going to look each other in the eye and agree that this is a place where we're going to talk about some really deep stuff, 5% greatest and 5% worst that's going on in your life, personal, family, business. That's the core of it. And then everything's gestalt, right? experience sharing, not advice giving. And so you have to be able to trust that group. And I think when you meet and talk with people, you kind of bond and you just start asking. And I think there's power in having different types of people in that group. In the group I'm with, all the people own very different businesses, very different. Some are tech and some are not tech, but we'll get into this later with Marcus Lemonis, but these issues don't know sector. So yeah, you just got to start asking and people got to agree that's truly going
to
be fight
camp. How long did it take you to trust your group?
So in the EO situation, they have a specific onboarding process. And when you go through that together with kind of a group of people, even though you're going to get put into some random forum, since you all go through a day exercise where you're doing the same thing, you're doing this thing called a lifeline or whatever, like your ups and downs. You come out of that day, like I'm looking you in the eye and I'm looking you in the eye and I'm feeling pretty confident that we're on the same page here, that we're going to talk about some deep stuff and we're going to keep that confidential. I would say later, pushing on as some other people came into the group, things would come out literally a year and 2 years later that you realize that 100% trust was not there yet.
Like you're talking years. I feel like people, especially in the 2024 age, if I don't get value or whatever from something in 2 weeks, I'm like, I'm out. Not worth it. And you're talking about years down the road, like new layers of trust are being revealed from your peer group. I think that's insane.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've noticed in the powder keg peer groups that we run, it's a little different because they're all people who share background in tech. And so there is a little bit of a shared language. I think we probably go deeper, faster on problems because it's like CAC to LTV ratio. We all know what that means. Yep. Rule of 40. Yep. We know all of those terms and like industry jargon. But I think one of the X factors in our groups is having someone who has done the role before as the facilitator. So Brian Powers, who sold PackSafe, incredible exit here in Indiana, sold to a unicorn darling, Ironclad out of the Bay Area. His ability to just be vulnerable and share first, like that, I think that is what accelerates that closeness and intimacy so fast, is if someone's willing to go first and be like, I got one for you. And I don't want to just use an example because I've heard just about everything now at this point. So confidentiality, to your point, is the most important thing in those groups. If you were to put one of these groups together yourself, I would say that that's the number one thing to hammer home every single session and make sure everybody knows confidential. Don't even anonymize stories and share them. What's said in these groups stays in these groups.
No pillow talk.
Absolutely. Like
it's a special moment that we shared, and that should be sacred.
100%. And there's a model for this, right? Like EO has done this for years. My mom's a group mental health counselor. She works with groups, and there's just a like the Bible on how to run these things. And you read that and you realize, okay, there's a method to getting groups to develop that level of intimacy and a process.
Yeah. I want to just real quick, something you said, Matt, is so true. You have to be vulnerable and go first. Like, I love going first. There's something actually that's like liberating and magic about going
Absolutely.
First. Like, I don't even give a rat's ass. Like childhood stories or whatever. Like we've talked about this, Muhammad, early on when we really started talking. I'm like, it's actually therapy for me. I'm actually doing it for me, not you.
Yep.
And
when you find out that so many people, you share that really vulnerable moment or that really vulnerable thing about you, and the person's, oh yeah, me too.
Me too.
Yeah.
Right.
And this happened
alone in it.
And they're like, holy shit, oh, it's crazy.
Talk about a way to accelerate relationships.
Yes,
right?
Accelerate relationships.
Cut out years of small talk BS and cut right to the human element.
To get value, you have to give value. Go first, right? To get respect, you have to give respect. Go first.
I think the term vulnerable, I listened to Max talk on one of the Bereave events. If you guys know Bereave, local startup that's like crushing it right now. And you hear about being vulnerable doesn't mean necessarily I have to say, oh, I'm sad or like these negative emotions.
Right.
He just said, and Max Yoder, obviously friend of Matt's and amazing tech leader here.
Founder
of Lessonly. Maybe you've heard of it. But he said, being vulnerable is sharing how you're feeling internally, externally.
Yep.
So if I'm just pumped up about something, it's like sharing that. Like, why am I pumped up?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why does this get Nate Spangle so excited? Why does this get Nate Spangle so sad? Sharing what, and it just resonated with me like more than, I don't know, anything I've probably read in the last 9 months.
It's emotional honesty.
Yeah. Right? And it's like not being afraid to say like why I'm excited, not being afraid to say why I'm sad. Be vulnerable. Just share how you're feeling internally, externally. It was crazy. I was like, because I'd always connected vulnerable to negative emotions.
Yeah,
like, it's not. I have to be like this weak, yada, 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 yada about being vulnerable. And it's no, you just have to be open.
It's like being real.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you now to flip your roles and put your investor hats on. Because there is a time and place for vulnerability.
Yep.
And I know from experience that one, you can overshare or too early in a relationship, especially if you're presenting to investors and trying to tell your story. At the same time, I almost think this is worse, is if you try to pretend like you got it all figured out and you don't show any kind of vulnerability when you're presenting your startup. So I'm curious to know what your experience is on that side of the table when you're evaluating opportunities to invest in. How do you think about vulnerability and how do you evaluate that when you're looking at
I'll say straight up, entrepreneurs don't hide it. So I'm going to tell you how we think about it and maybe me personally. And I'm going to get vulnerable with a personal story. So I'm going to go back to a real life situation just so people know that I've been through the same thing. So I had a company and we were deep into one of our vendors, a contractor that installed a lot of these systems for us. And things went wonky. I'll spare the details. We don't have time for it now. But the bottom line is I couldn't pay this contractor. And I'm talking several hundred thousand dollars. This wasn't $10,000.
That's scary.
Several hundred thousand dollars. And it's ballooning up because we're installing all these systems. And I had a term sheet that disappeared, $7 million term sheet that got yanked, got bombs happening. It's looming. All the VCs are holding on to their money. And so I'm in trouble. And so I went to the CEO of that company and I said, hey, this is what's going on. Transparent. I laid it out and here's where I am. And this is what we plan to do. Here's option A, option B, option C. This is the plan. And I need a year. And hopefully within that year, something's going to happen. Long story short, all of his advisors said, yank the rug. You're screwed. Shut it down now. And he said, no, nobody's ever come to me, to my office and faced me face to face, eye to eye. And was that vulnerable? Was that transparent? Long story short, he got paid every dollar. So we just went through what we went through with another market downturn, right? And valuations and people over their skis and ramp not going the way you think it's going to go, et cetera. The entrepreneurs, the companies that come in and are just honest and forthright and transparent, it's really easy to try to come, but to try to come up with a solution, right? The ones that don't and come at the last second are still hiding the monkey, et cetera.
How do you die or diversify or whatever? Like, the difference between making excuses like, oh, it's not working right, like yada, 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 and being honest and transparent. Because I feel like that's a thin line where it's like if someone comes in and is just like, my dog ate my homework, life's not going my way, like blah, 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 versus someone who comes in and is transparent. Like, how would you say, what advice would you give to founders that are like trying to do that, but they don't want to sound like they're pitching about it?
This sounds generic probably, but there's three words I was taught out of school called manage by fact. And like, just manage by fact. Just break your business down. And this goes back to that mouthful concept I talked about earlier. Just shed the noise and just focus on, just think of unit, just basic building blocks.
Yeah.
Literally, that's what matters in that moment. Basic building blocks, unit costs, who do you really need to sell and make the thing? And who really is your best customer? And are there customers that are costing you more money than you're actually making in revenue? You really have to ask those honest questions. And you can tell pretty quickly if they've sat down and thought about that.
What's your initial reaction when you hear a pitch from an entrepreneur and it's all upside, it's all things are up and to the right. And there's, even after questioning, they are trying to present themselves as it's all buttoned up. What is your initial reaction to that?
You try to give them a chance to correct course.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought I would rather pull someone back than try to push them forward.
Yeah.
I gotta share a quick story about that whole piece. I walked into Mickey's camp last year and Gary Brackett was standing there.
For those who don't know, we give the 30-second on Mickey's camp.
Yeah. So Mickey's camp it was started by Mickey Maurer, great business person, philanthropist, et cetera, here in Indianapolis. And he started a camp for people to get together and bond and share and have experiences together and community build. And
so set the scene.
And so he does it I don't even remember where it's at, Bradford Woods.
Yep.
At near IU. And there's an all women's Mickey's camp and an all men's camp. And fill in the blanks. What am I missing?
More about it than I do.
And you literally can stay in bunks. When I was younger, I used to stay in bunks. Now I get an Airbnb and fill this up.
Who's Mickey?
Mickey Maurer.
Oh, yeah. Mickey Maurer. Classic. Who's Mickey Maurer?
Bank of Indianapolis. IBJ.
I should know who Mickey Maurer is.
Oh, for like, sure.
You should absolutely know who Mickey Maurer is.
All right.
For sure. Mr. Indiana should know who Mickey Maurer is.
30-year-olds, we're going to do a deep dive on who Mickey Maurer is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, you need to go get Mickey Maurer on your next gig, whatever we're doing. You should go get Mickey Maurer.
Yeah.
Right. He's amazing.
So I walk up, and it's the transition of the men and women, et cetera. And I'm walking up, and Gary Brackett, who used to play for the Colts, is standing there talking about motivational things. And one of the folks said, hey, my son thinks he's going to play professional football, and he's a good high school athlete, but he's not going to play professional football, and probably not even D1 college and whatever. And what should I do to reset his expectations? And Gary said, you should never reset the expectations. And so if this is that kid's goal, right, up here, and they land here, that's awesome. And I thought that was so spot on. So
even coming up short on a big goal is better than having a short goal.
That's right. And will they be grounded? I guess if everything's up and to the right and beautiful and hunky-dory, you can decipher pretty quickly, will they surround themselves with the right people to execute?
I think, yeah, in that big term, it's you say, oh, well, you're positive and you're optimistic and yeah, it's going to go great. And if you don't, some adversity comes. It's, I don't know, but it's figure outable. Mm-hmm. That's where the E, mm-hmm. I feel like, of the Melfo. I think, is it entrepreneur?
Yeah.
It's like banking on that person. There's going to be adversity that's not going to be in the pitch deck, but it's, I bet on that person to be able to figure it out.
Grit and
gratuity. Not to be confused with gratuity.
So y'all, Elevate sees thousands of entrepreneurs every single year. What are some of the trends you're seeing in technology right now that are exciting? Because you mentioned, obviously, economic shifts over the last couple of years, but the technological shifts have been insane.
Yep.
What are some of the things that you're most excited about when you look at all the thousands of entrepreneurs that you've talked to?
So, Mahmoud, do you want to go first from the...
Yeah, let me talk about it from the marketing perspective. I've seen a lot of changes in early stage startups, honestly, since COVID.
Yeah.
Something about quarantine and the way it made us all so introspective really opened these companies up, right? I think before COVID, you saw, to Nate's point, the companies are trying to say everything's great and act really big, even when they were really small. And you see a lot more vulnerability and honesty from those early stage companies. That's now. Great. They're willing to say that they're early, that they're willing to say that they're figuring things out, and they're willing to be honest and actually share about their journey as they build. And I think that is creating some really exciting marketing that people can connect to. Because even in business, I mean, we're connecting with people, right? And them being able to, they're in a unique opportunity when it is two or three people to actually let you connect to the human beings versus a big company where there's thousands of people and it's really difficult to do. So I'm really excited about what the marketing looks like. And coming out of COVID, the lean back to in-person marketing, right? The lean back into events, the brunches, the coffee and happy hours, and that sort of thing that we see marketing departments early stage really putting their resources and time into. That's how they're actually connecting and getting customers.
I end up on the rabbit hole of the five-person startup. Like Kenga Coolers does this really well. Like their marketing doesn't say anything about coolers. It's like we outgrew our spot and like they're literally like talking about the navigating like the problems that the business has. I think you guys talked to Habits, Jack Boudreau, it's like finance. I think that they just announced a round and I think you guys might be involved in it, I believe. But he literally like will video his sales call, like his investor calls, like his side of it. You can't hear what the investor says, his pitches, his sales meetings. And it's like, he posts it on TikTok and people love it in the comments. Like they go crazy because, oh, that's a really great way to close. Or it's like, bro, you really fumbled the bag right there.
And you would have totally never seen that back in the day.
Yeah,
you've never seen that.
No, and people love it. And like they're like, more sales content, more VC content. That's so cool. And he just crushes it on TikTok. And as an early stage startup raising their seed round, like has 20,000 followers on TikTok or whatever that are like along for the journey just by saying like, I pitched this VC and this is how it went. So cool.
That's great. I love that.
What are you seeing?
That's amazing. I'm going to have to go check that out. I've never heard of that.
I'm pretty sure he's indie based. I think that you guys are involved.
Wow. So what are we seeing? So I would say we're starting to see, and I don't think it's proliferated yet, but I feel like we're starting to see people embrace modern technologies, but also, how do I say this? Maybe I'll say it this way. Everybody used to say, and there's still some element of that, but a lot of the crap that people talk about is not AI. It's like BI. And that's still awesome.
BI, like, as in business intelligence.
Business intelligence. And that can still be totally awesome. I don't know. What is AI? I don't know. To me, AI is like the Terminator.
We're going to need another hour. That's the question that we're posing. We're going to need another hour.
Where it's self-learning on itself, and you're not touching it. Like, that's ultimate AI. So anyways, I get a little exhausted about the term AI. So I find it refreshing that some companies don't use it.
I'd love to, as we're on the topic of like what we're seeing, just like really quickly dive into one each of what are the cool companies or entrepreneurs that you see coming out of Indiana today?
Wow, that's a big question. There are a lot of companies coming out of Indiana, right? On a daily basis.
If there's just one that's in the top of your head, oh man, this company is doing something freaking insane and the entire state of Indiana needs to know about it.
I'm gonna use it. So there's one that's scaling. It's called Scale Computing. And I find the reason I mentioned that one is with what happened with VMware and Broadcom, et cetera, their opportunity is was always big, but now has become big and imminent and very real. So I'm super excited about Scale Computing.
And they're like in the, it's unsexy tech, right? Like you're not reading about this on the front page of TechCrunch usually, unless they raise a big funding round.
It's edge computing.
But none of this happens. None of these other cool things happen without the computing power that a company like Scale Computing
And anybody listening to this podcast benefits from it unknowingly.
Absolutely.
Every time you go to a store and you check out, you're benefiting from it and you just don't know it.
Yep.
Like I've known Scale Computing for 5 years, no idea what they do. Like
edge computing.
It's computing.
The edge. Sorry, self-provisioning. It's amazing technology.
It's really cool.
It's awesome. There's also a lot of like Unified Sierra. It's a drone company. Or there's a quantum computing company up at Purdue that's very early.
Unified Sierra is the DOD contract drones. Right? And now that because of the legislature or whatever, that parts have to come from America.
From America.
They're American made drones.
Yes.
And they're like kids.
Yes. Well, they're just out of college.
That's so sick.
That's why we like to say, this is going to be our new tagline, but like we are looking for every innovation-driven entrepreneur from dorm room to boardroom. And like literally from dorm room to boardroom.
That's good, right?
From dorm room to boardroom.
Let's go.
I love that.
I like it.
Because they're everywhere, right? It's insane.
I love it. That's cool.
Do you have any favorite company?
Yeah. You know, the one I'm, I think, geeking out about right now, just from a pure marketing perspective, is Backstroke. And I think this is a good example also of, Toph mentioned AI. I think a lot of companies put it in the forefront. The reality is that AI is going to be in the background of everything, right?
The more AI silent is the AI, new cloud, the better.
Right.
For those who don't know what Backstroke is, High Alpha Company, right? Do you mind giving
So High Alpha Company started by two really good marketers. One of them does have certainly an AI background, right? And they are helping people deliver better messaging. So I personally use them. They have a free tool that allows you to punch in a couple of things and get some really great subject lines for your email, for email marketing, for example, which is one of the hardest things to do and one of the most important pieces of marketing you can, the shortest but most important copy you could ever write.
I can retweet that 1,000 times. Everyone, it's just a subject line, but it's, I'll spend sometimes more time on the subject line than the freaking content in the email. Yeah,
you should, 100%. Because if it doesn't get open, none of the other content matters.
What was this all for?
100%. Yeah. But I think I love that because from a marketing perspective, they are out there in the field meeting customers on a day-to-day basis across the country. But also it's a good example of having AI, but it being in the background. Right. Yeah. It is the backbone of it is not the story that's up front, because honestly, at this point in our AI journey, it shouldn't be the front story.
OK, so what are some of the companies that are involved with Rally this year? Because last year there were some amazing companies. Talk about like Volterra and what maybe we talk about last year first. What were some of the companies that came out of Rally last year that have gone on to do big things? Because obviously I'm a huge fan of what Volterra is doing, but there's so many great companies that came out of the Rally conference.
Yeah, totally fired up. So four of the five winners of Rally last year have all either already set up shop or in the process of setting up shop in Indiana because it really helps their business. There are so many things that can help move their business forward, whether it's customers and the willingness here of customers to take that risk to let's do a pilot, right? Let's do a beta test. Let's do whatever. Or manufacturing, right? Having the facilities and the types of people here and the willingness to introduce people, right? So four of those five are already funded in the process of setting up shop here. So you have My Biometry in healthcare. You have EdSound Research in sports tech. Paulco was food and ag. Who am I missing? Software. They did not move here, but wanted to. The CEO wanted to, but the chairman didn't
let that happen. Which one was software? What was the one from Louisville?
Let's pause for a second.
Yeah.
We can take this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this section here, let's just delete it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Totally. Let's dive into tell me a little bit about the companies that are involved with Rally this year, because obviously with 5 winners last year, I know a bunch of them moved headquarters and big parts of their operation to Indiana. Edge Sound Research is one of my favorites, just knowing that the
such
fact
a cool
that
product, right?
Yeah, it's like so for those who aren't familiar with Edge Sound Research, super cool entrepreneur, Valteri Val, has developed technology that basically you can feel sound. So the sports connections that Indiana has, being the amateur sports capital of the world, home of the Colts, home of the Pacers, home of the Indy 500, what an awesome strategic place for them to have a headquarters. And yep. That all happened because of Rally. And now they're installing across the country in major venues, sporting venues. They were at the Indy 500 this year. I saw that he's at one of the bigger conventions this week. So many cool stories from last year. What are some of the ones that you're really excited about this year when you look at, I think it was like, what, hundreds of companies applied to pitch this year, right?
Yeah, we had about almost 350 applications.
Wow.
From, I think, roughly 15 countries, 30 states. I don't have those numbers memorized, but it's roughly that. Does that sound right? Mm-hmm. Roughly? And one thing we noticed from this year over year is that the quality of companies, like last year, a lot of great quality of companies too. This year seemed more dense. Like mm-hmm. The applications seemed more dense. Like there were a number of applications last year that I think people didn't realize. You know, you're competing for up to $1 million. You got to be buttoned up. And they went through the gauntlet to make it to the main stage to pitch.
That's cool.
And everybody who made it to the main stage, they're all winners.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to pick one. But
yeah.
But yeah, Muhammad, what else would you say?
Yeah, I think that the quality of people coming in, not that last year was amazing. There's some amazing people that sent in, but I was super excited this year to see the types of entrepreneurs that were taking the time to actually submit for the end prize.
Yeah.
Right. It's a higher caliber. They're taking this very seriously and they're bringing some really cool products to the stage.
I can't wait to see some of those pitches on stage at Rally. And it's not just entrepreneurs of startups, right? You have some big name people, A-Rod, Marcus Lemonis. Tell me a little bit about the speakers.
Super fired up. So we have Tia White. She's going to come in and be more the futurist, right? She's an AI expert. So super fired up about Tia White. And then A-Rod, Marcus Lemonis, and Jan Mardenborough. So Muhammad, we'll throw these around and tee them up. There's multiple reasons. I'm so excited about several of them. The two big things I'll hit on is one with Jan, or I'll go to Marcus Lemonis first. Marcus Lemonis, The Prophet, if you haven't heard of
the show,
the TV show The Prophet.
I've binged it.
And what I love about Marcus Lemonis is he has an insane ability to look at any business, doesn't matter what they do, any business, and I've always believed this, that business at the core is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the ability to go into any business and break it down to the basics of why it's not working, why it's failing. Here's what you should tweak and change. Go execute that. And then I'll bet, right? Cross-sector is a cross-sector conference, so I think it's totally applicable. Jan Mardenborough, watched the movie one night, jump out of bed at 1 o'clock. I was so inspired. I pop him a note on LinkedIn, didn't hear anything back. And about a month later, I think his manager, mm-hmm. popped somebody a note back and said, okay, we've been researching you. You guys look legit. So let's talk.
What's the story for those who haven't seen the movie?
In the movie, yeah. Give us a detail.
So Gran Turismo is about a kid that is a gamer and games 8 hours a day, basically. And the dad opened the door like, you're never about anything. And then Nissan comes along and they're tracking all of these gamers across the globe, so they know who the best gamers are, right? Who
Gran Turismo is like a driving game, right?
Driving, mm-hmm. racing game.
Because I remember that from the original PlayStation days, Gran Turismo on the original PlayStation, so I'm imagining this is not the original PlayStation. This is probably like a PS, whatever they're on now.
And I think the founder of Gran Turismo is from Japan, so it's a Japanese game, I believe.
Okay.
Very realistic racing game.
Yeah.
And so Nissan has this idea of, let's look at all the best racers, and let's have a big racing competition, a big gaming race competition. And then whoever the best of the best are, let's invite them over to, do you remember what country it was?
It was somewhere in Europe. They're putting them in actual race cars.
They put them in actual race cars.
Which is amazing.
I love that.
And Jan wins that whole thing and becomes an actual race car driver.
He's like cruising around in a real race car now.
One of the big kind of like culmination of this whole movie is him winning one of the major races in Europe.
Yeah.
Right, against all the odds. And I love this story particularly. I'm super excited about Jan coming in because it is a good example of what the future of work looks like,
yep.
right? If we look at any of the really high risk, high reward jobs that we have today, think surgeons or military or pilots, all these sorts of things, they are learning their job in a simulator first before they go out and actually do the job in the real world. And we're seeing that come down
further and further into new types of jobs, even down to salespeople. That's how we teach salespeople, right? It is a, we call it a role play. It's really a simulation, right?
Yep.
Whether it's one-on-one or whether it is in with a subsonic technology, we teach people through simulations.
So,
and that's exactly what happened with Jan. He learned through PlayStation and took those skills that he learned and put them in a real life race car.
So I asked my nephew, who's 13 years old, what his favorite VR game is. Cause you know, he plays on the Oculus, plays all the games. And he said, it's this game. I think it's called Shopkeeper. It's literally like stocking shelves.
My daughter also loves the Oculus game. There's a fast food restaurant that she works in. And so what's interesting is, she's like flipping burgers and she's, oh, my boss said I have to do X, Y, Z. And she's complaining about her boss and him trying to get her to increase her output and everything. And it's just like you're working in the kitchen at a fast food restaurant in VR. What is interesting, this was before she actually started working and she just got her first job recently. And it is actually at a theater. As a server.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I'm like, okay.
Yep. This is what we play. This is what we prepare for.
This is going to be awesome.
It's like, you go into a room like that. You need to go to bed. Dad, I'm practicing for work tomorrow.
Exactly.
Give me a break. We're watching the film.
I love that.
No way.
So back to what Muhammad was saying. So all these tools are coming out.
Yeah.
We are going to be able to see who's using all these modern technologies, chat GPTs and all the hundreds and thousands of things that are coming out. Just like Jan was being tracked on how good of a racer he is, we're going to be able to track who is really good at doing, at utilizing these various tools. And it's going to be like Nike in the 70s. And employers are going to start going to high schools and all the way back into junior high. And I think we're going to see people doing $100,000 commits to come work for my company. Or, okay, you really want to go to college? I'm paying for your college, but you got to agree to come work for me for 5 years. And locking people in as a senior in high school, a junior, a sophomore, freshmen and working themselves back. It's going to happen. Mark my words right now, because we're going to be able to track who's the best of the best.
Yeah, I love it.
Mm-hmm. You're going to start getting scholarships for work.
As someone, as someone who has emceed hundreds of conferences and events around the world, I am really excited about the MC that you picked for Rally. Can you tell me a little bit about Jennifer Magley?
Muhammad?
Man, she is one of the most dynamic people I've probably met. And I meet a lot of people. I go to a lot of events. She's that person where you go into the room and the entire room seems to be like circulating around this person's gravity. That's Jennifer.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm so excited about her coming on. She has a sports background and just the level of when we asked her to do her first little social media post on coming to join Rally. We know we send her a little script, right, as usual. And most people will be like, oh, let me take your script. I'm going to tweak a couple of little things just to show that I didn't take it for all in. She went deep on editing that script. And then she was warning us, I think, in a way, how wild are you okay with me getting with this, right? Which, excited about it, what I wasn't expecting was money guns in her LinkedIn post, right?
I love it.
I saw that. I was like, who is this? Let's go.
It was awesome.
She's got the ATM pistol up there just going.
It was amazing.
Dynamic speaker.
Great business person as well, right?
Athlete,
so she understands the
person.
Space.
Yes.
And I think she's going to be, you know, amazing. Rally is really about bringing together all these people across multiple sectors and the energy that happens with that.
Yeah.
And I think having an MC that really matches and possibly even exceeds that level of energy is going to be a great kind of cog to keep this thing going.
100%. 100%. Such good energy. I'm so excited for Rally. Any final thoughts on Rally? Can you tell people just give them like the trailer for Rally this year?
So I would say if you want to be at the world's largest cross-sector innovation festival, you should be at Rally. The theme this year is creative convergence. Like it's a real thing. Cross-sector, disparate stakeholders, one place, one time. That's where magic happens. And things are going to happen that are going to transform you personally and professionally, whether it's finding your lead for Series A or finding a global expert in cold plunging. Mm-hmm. You're going to find it all at Rally. And it's going to be all that happened last year.
100% happened.
Oh, that's.
So over 3,000 people in 2 days, and it's just immersive experience like no other.
Yeah, I'm excited. Anything you'd add to that, Muhammad?
If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, you should do it now. There, we continue to raise the prices. It gets closer and closer, but the value in it is so huge, worth it, right? It is a big weekend or a big week, not only just for innovation in Indianapolis, but just also for Indianapolis, period. So whether you're in Indiana and need to come to Indianapolis to make sure you're participating in these creative kind of convergences, or you're from outside of the state, I'd say come in, make a week of it, right? There's lots of other events actually happening even around Raleigh where you can stay for a week and get a whole lot of value as a business person, but also just as a human being.
So yeah, the majority of the people that come to Raleigh are from across the country and across the globe.
Yeah, it's so incredible. Yeah. And I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot here, Muhammad. We didn't talk about this ahead of time and we didn't clear it with Tove. But for special get-in listeners, could we do something for them? Just like the first five to use like some sort of a code so that they can get their ticket today?
I feel it doesn't like have to be we're crazy. Just so on the same page. You know, did not warn me, but that was the next thing I was going to say, actually. I was going to surprise you with it.
Oh, okay. Oh, right? I like it.
All right. So yeah, if you use code GETIN, we can do 40% off.
What? 40%? I was like,
let's go.
I was hoping for 5 to 10. Dude, you guys are awesome. All right. So you heard it here. 40%, and that's good for the first five people or first 10 people to use it?
We can do the first 10.
10. All right.
We can do that.
Those will go fast.
We're good friends.
Those will go fast.
Is it get in or rally get in?
Just can do just straight get out in. Get in. Get
all
in.
One get word. In. Get in. All one word. All right.
Get in.
You heard it here. Dude, that's Bam. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Beast.
That's incredible.
Thanks. See, well, to give value, you have to give value.
Yeah, that's right.
And sometimes you got to ask.
Yeah.
You got to ask.
Full circle, baby. I love it. All right. Now it's time for our favorite part of the show. It is the lightning round. Tof, you've already done the lightning round, Nate Spangle style.
Yep.
But Muhammad has yet to get the Spangle lightning. Do you want to?
I hear you're really good at this.
That might be what I'm known for. Who knows? This last 2 minutes section here. Muhammad, outside of the entrepreneurial ecosystem, what is Indiana known for?
Oh, man. So for me, coming in from out of state.
Can we talk about where were you from?
So I'm from Ohio. Which mm-hmm. I jokingly call Indiana East, right? But it's also different, right? Indiana has a much different vibe than Ohio. What I love about Indiana and Indianapolis in general is live music.
Yeah.
We have some amazing music venues, like honestly throughout the state, and a lot of really good, not only like top tier artists that come in, but also a lot of those emerging artists, yeah. right? I cannot count the number of times where Spotify has suggested someone to me in my Discover Weekly that I get obsessed with, and they're from somewhere in the world, and then I suddenly see them on the marquee for some local
the
bar.
The Hi-Fi,
like
the Vogue, the Palladium.
100%.
All these amazing
Black
venues
Circle,
here.
Like there's so many places in town
yeah.
Where I've been able to see some amazing music from like really early stage artists.
All right, so Indiana's slowly answer. Becoming known for music. Okay, that kind of tees us right into the next one about-
We have Sweetwater.
Heck yeah.
Our boys, yes. Muhammad, what is a hidden gem in Indiana?
Ooh, I'm going to go back to the same thing. We're going to stay in the music category. I think that Black Circle is one of the hidden gems of Indiana and Indianapolis. It is a very small, I'd call it like punk bar of sorts.
On 46th Street, right?
Yeah.
At Refinery 46, basically.
At Refinery 46. It is small. They play old VHS movies on a little TV behind the bar you can watch. Got pinball machines, and they have a lot of music. And one of the things that I like about that particular venue is when they have musicians coming in, a lot of them are for all ages,
mm-hmm.
right? So for me, someone that has a 16-year-old who's also obsessed with music, it's somewhere where we can go together and actually enjoy that. And then they, of course, have Black Circle Market, which is a big once-a-month maker's market as well, and just a great contributor to the community as a whole.
That's awesome. They have some artists that go in there that are like, pretty hardcore rockers,
100%.
Right? I was down below in the space at the Friday 46. Like we were recording an Or Fellowship podcast, and all of a sudden we hear like test, and then just someone starts going crazy on the guitar.
They don't play.
And I was just like, all right, we're gonna wrap the show because they were going crazy up there. It was awesome.
Great indoor venue, but amazing outdoor venue.
Amazing
too.
Outdoor space, and it's a space that they expanded during quarantine and actually built out during quarantine. There are a lot of communities that were used to convening that couldn't because of quarantine restrictions, and they built that outside space so people could actually come and see performances, whether that be music or performance art, et cetera, in a safe space. and actually bring their families.
Do they still have that awesome restaurant next door that has the Cuban sandwiches?
The restaurant next door has gone through a couple of changes.
Okay, there
is something new there now.
Okay.
But I got to
go. I go back then. I got to go back and try the new restaurant.
All right. My last question goes to each of you, because I know that Tove also has a ton of people that he's seen here, but it's going to be about who is a Hoosier that we need to keep on our radar? A Hoosier that's doing big things.
Ooh, Tove first.
F you, Muhammad.
one person that the state needs to know. Who is one person that Indiana needs to know?
We got a table of politicians here. Watch out.
Oh, man. So I gave you two people, and they are, I'd say, mostly known in some circles, but there's certainly plenty that are not. But Molly and Allen from Butter, or Gang. So it's a community organization called Gang here in Indianapolis. They're really dedicated to the arts in Indiana. And their first big event really was the Butter Art Fair, which is in year, I believe, 4 this year. Curated art from across the country presented in a gallery setting. And year 1, they had literal museums shopping at this art fair. And that continues to be the case. People flying in from all over the country to buy art. Many of those pieces from people who have never maybe even sold art before and are getting high dollar values. So that was huge. But then they also expanded their reach as a kind of a cultural organization into the country's first Black rock and roll festival this past year, or multiple other events. That
was I Made Rock and Roll,
yep.
Right?
And
yeah.
It was that was Janelle Monáe on
Gary
stage in the middle of downtown Indianapolis. That was a vibe.
That was a vibe.
I love Butter's installation that they had at Circle Center Mall for the All-Star game. That was incredible.
Well,
so cool.
Molly and Allen, when you see this, you're cordially invited on to get in, and we'd love to have you on to talk about all the cool things you're doing.
Heck yeah.
Tove, who's someone in Indiana that we need to know?
I'm going to go with Emil Echior.
That's a good one.
And I'm going to go with Emil because Emil is just selflessly the time he spends on trying to spread, I like to say, spread the gospel of entrepreneurship. And then he talks about he wants to make Indianapolis, make Indiana the Black entrepreneurship capital of the world. And I'm like, let's go, let's roll. And so like the things that he's doing nationally and even internationally, trying to spread the word and show on ramps of how people who want to attack entrepreneurship, whatever type of business, that here's how you can go about that.
And we gave listeners of Get In an early look at some of the work he was doing in episode 2 or 3, maybe, of Get In.
One of the first five,
for sure.
Go back and listen.
But since then, he's done so many more things. The partnership with Elevate.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a rally string there,
yes,
too.
They're
bringing
this
conference this year, Minority Business Week, into Rally.
So cool.
It's huge.
I freaking love that. Yep. So you might not know this, Tove, but I have a lightning round now.
Oh, Nelly.
I've got three questions for each of you. Same questions.
This is innovation.
All right. Hashtag innovation. All right. Tove, I'm going to go you first, and then I'll go you next, Muhammad, and then we'll reverse roll. All right. Tove, if you could have a superpower to solve any business challenge, what would it be and why? A superpower to solve any business challenge.
The respect for people to not screw each other over.
And why?
That's the way it should be.
I like it. I like it. What about you, Muhammad? If you could have one superpower business, what would it be and why?
It would be time travel. Not the ability to go forward, but the ability to go backward. Let's say even 3 months, right? To be able to say, hey, I went around this corner. Oops, I swung for the fences, but I made the wrong decision. And be able to back up 3 months, even if I could only do it a couple of times in the course of building a business, would be enormous.
Take more shots. Take more big shots, right?
100%.
Oh, I like that.
That's like a mulligan. Yeah, 2 mulligans.
That's
right?
Really good.
You're like in the final presentation, like they say, yeah, unfortunately, we're going with your competitor. Like, go ahead. We first ask, what were the reasons you didn't go with us? Then click.
All right, final question. Which entrepreneur do you secretly admire and why? Muhammad, if you want to go first this time.
Secretly admire. I don't know that I like secretly admire people. If I, back to the openness piece, I think if you like someone and you like what they're doing, you should say that. I think that too many of us go through life wondering if people approve of what we're doing or what we're doing or value what we're doing. And there's a lot of value in just saying that to a person. You never know what kind of impact you are going to make on them.
So totally agree.
Who was the last person that you gave that feedback to and said, you know what? I freaking love what this person's doing.
Not to double click, but it was probably honestly Emil.
Yeah.
I think at Animal Power, we had the opportunity to travel together recently and have some really good conversations about the work that he is doing in the community. And I think it's incredibly important.
Love it. Toph, who is one entrepreneur you secretly admire and why?
So, Matt, my rapid response is this is not going to be the answer that we're looking for, but it's not an individual entrepreneur. It's going to be people in general that help turn down the volume of discourse.
Mm.
I like that.
We really are at a threshold here, I believe, in where we can talk about all the innovation and the entrepreneurship in the world. But if our population cannot live safely and confidently, and we can't look our children in the eyes and truly believe that it's just without question that their future is going to be incredible, if we don't dial down the discourse in this country and show more deference to each other, we're going to have big problems where innovation and entrepreneurship won't even matter.
Mm.
And that's who I admire. People who just remember the Saturday Night Live skit, simmer down.
That's a great answer.
That's like a subtle plug to go back and listen to the episode that we just dropped with Elliot and just echoing that. Elliot is insanely smart. And he said that now is the only time in the history of the world where if you poll people, the majority will say that the future is not going to be better than the present.
Mm.
Like where being optimistic is like you're in the minority there. And I think that's terrifying and sad as like someone who's pretty optimistic. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to shift the scales back over to where I believe the future, like present is great, but the future is going to be even better. And having that like that rhetoric of optimism.
And that's the natural order of things, right?
Yeah. That was
Elliot Parker from High Alpha Innovation.
Yes. And he like brought in like these insane stuff. And I was literally sitting here and my jaw dropped. I was like, you're joking. Because he talks about being entrepreneurs having to be contrarian. And he's like, if you want to be contrarian today in 2024, be optimistic. Like the most contrarian guy right here. It's your boy.
The rebel.
Guys, this episode has been so special to me. Really, as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, a season finale. Get In would not have happened as a podcast without Elevate Ventures. Toph, without this being your brainchild and saying, hey, you know what? More people need to know about what makes Indiana
share stories.
Awesome. Yeah. And share the stories. And we've shared so many stories here. Thanks to you and thanks to Elevate Ventures. And thank you both for coming on and sharing kind of an update, capping off this season with us. It's been quite a journey and I feel really grateful for all these moments.
Thanks awesome. For having us. Thanks for having us. This has been an absolute blast.
This has been Get In, a Powder Keg production in partnership with Elevate Ventures. And we want to hear from you. If you have suggestions for a guest or a segment, reach out to Matt or Nate on LinkedIn or on email. To discover top-tier tech companies outside of Silicon Valley in hubs like Indiana, check out our newsletter at powderkeg.com/newsletter. And to apply for membership to the Powder Keg executive community, check out powderkeg.com/premium. We'll catch you next time and next week as we continue to help the world get in. Since you just listened to this podcast, you might be thinking about starting one for your company. Lucky for you, our partners over at Casted have you covered. Casted is the first and only podcast and video marketing platform made specifically for B2B brands. I love this about them. The platform makes it possible to publish, syndicate, amplify, and measure the value of your podcast and video content. In fact, we use it for our podcast here at Powder Keg. And if you're a startup, you should listen up because Casted for Startups is definitely for you. They are offering exclusive deep discounts of up to 82% off retail price for qualifying startups. Connect with Casted at casted.us/powderkeg.